Śrī-Bhagavānuvāca
Śrī-Bhagavānuvāca
Aham Brahmācha Sarvascha Jagatākaranam Param Atmeshvara Upadrashta Svayandrik Avisheshana. Word by word translation. Sri Bhagavan, Lord Vishnu, Uvacha, said, Aham, I, Brahma, Brahma, of the material manifestation, Karanam, cause, Param, supreme. Atmaishvara, the Super Soul, Upadrashta, no difference. In the Bhaktivedanta Swami, Lord Vishnu replied, Vishnu witness, but impersonally, there is no difference between Brahma, Lord Shiva, and me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma was born out of the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu. And Lord Shiva was born out of the body of Brahma. Lord Vishnu, therefore, is the supreme cause. In the Vedas also it is stated that in the beginning there was only Vishnu, Narayana. There was no Brahma. And Brahma and Shiva are manifested after creation. Lord Vishnu is also Atmeshvara, the Super Soul in everyone. Under his direction, everything is prompted from within. For example, in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Tene Brahma Harida, the first educated Lord Brahma. Pirhi Devanam. Lord Vishnu or Krishna is the origin of all demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. In another place, in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Krishna states, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, everything is generated from me. This includes all the demigods. Similarly, in Vedanta Sutra, Janmaliyasa Yataha, and in the Upanishads is the statement, Yatova Imani Bhutani Jayante, everything is generated from Lord Vishnu. Everything is maintained by him and everything is annihilated by his energy. Therefore, by their actions and reactions, the energies which come from him create the cosmic manifestation and also dissolve the whole creation. Thus, the Lord is the cause and also the effect. Whatever effect we see in the interaction of his energy, and because the energy is generated from him, he is both the cause and the effect. Simultaneously, everything is different and the same. It is said that everything is Brahma. Sarvam kalo idam Brahma. In the highest vision, nothing is beyond Brahma. And therefore, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are certainly non-different from him. Translation again, Lord Vishnu replied, Brahma, Lord Shiva and I are the supreme cause of the material manifestation. I am the Super Soul, the self-sufficient witness, but impersonally there is no difference between Brahma, Lord Shiva and me. Om Agenati Mirandasya Agenanjana Shanakaya Chakshura Milita Mena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Stavita Mena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Vedati Svapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpakarubhyascha Upasindubhyascha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a very instructive section of Srimad Bhagavatam. We have just been reading about how a daksha's sacrifice actually became a disaster because his own daughter actually committed suicide. Lord Shiva's servants destroyed the sacrificial arena. There were so many victims simply because Daksha became offensive to Lord Shiva. So then after the whole altercation, all this fighting, the sacrifice is now to begin, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, and all the present personalities actually begin to offer prayers to Him. So this is practically mostly, almost the whole chapter is just prayers to the Supreme Person. By different devotees, of different great personalities, demigods. Daksha's head was cut off as well and replaced with the head of a goat. So, some kind of a biological engineering was going on at that time. And some really dynamic things were happening there. So, after this, Daksha's heart became purified of his envy, and he came to his senses. So Lord Shiva actually excused him, and then they began the sacrifice, chanting the mantras, and then Lord Vishnu became satisfied, and then he appeared. And consequently, all the demigods like Indra, Brahma, etc., Gandharvas and different sages, Brahmanas began to offer prayers to Lord Vishnu. And now this is the first verse where Lord Vishnu replies to their prayers by making this strong statement. Brahma, Lord Shiva and I are the supreme cause of the material manifestation. I am the super soul, the self-sufficient witness, but impersonally there is no difference between Brahma, Lord Shiva and me. So why would he say that at this particular time and place? Because like Prabhupada goes extensively to explain in the purport, we are actually faced with the reality of Achintya Vera Vera Tattva, and which means simultaneous oneness and difference between the source of everything and his energies. They are one, but at the same time they are different. So offending a devotee, offending the energy of the Lord, which is non-different in one sense, like Brahma and Shiva are the energy of the Lord, then we are actually offending him. That's why he says there is no difference. Impersonally means, Prabhupada uses the word impersonally, that there is no difference. Which means there is no difference in quality. But in quantity there is a difference, of course, and Prabhupada gives many, many points, even quoting Shankaracharya, Narayana Paraha, as well as few verses from Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Sutra, the Upanishads, to make his case that although the Lord states that they are non-different, Prabhupada puts the word impersonally. If you look at the text, the word impersonally doesn't fit in there. It's not there, really. Literally, it's not there. So Prabhupada on purpose puts that word to make sure that we don't get confused by impersonal philosophy. Because the impersonal philosophy will lead to confusion, the confusion that we are all God. Ultimately, impersonalism means that if Brahma and Shiva are also God, if the energy is also one with the whole, then I am also God and you are God and we are all God. And then the worship to the Supreme Lord will disappear, and practically behavior will change. When the worldview is different from what is being taught in the Vedas, if we create our own worldview, then the behavior will certainly change as well. So how will it change the behavior? Well, if we understand that the Supreme Person is the object of service, we will serve the Supreme Person, we will be conscious of the desires of the Supreme Person, we will be conscious of the laws of the Supreme Person, and we will try to be in harmony with the laws and the desires of the Supreme Person. But if we are confused to think we are all equal to the Supreme Person, then we may start, not we may, but we will start creating our own laws, and our own desire will become more important than the desire of the Supreme Person. And that is called impersonalism. And from this will manifest atheism. We will start to act in an egotistical sense without considering the source of everything. So this is really the danger of misunderstanding verses like this. That's why Prabhupada puts the word impersonally. And then he goes on to explain everything clearly within the purpose, so that there is no confusion. In our modern society, the predominant consciousness is of atheism. There is some impersonalism and there is little bit of Vaishnavism because of Prabhupada and perhaps few other preachers that are doing some good work in the world, but Prabhupada is of course the main source of Vaishnavism in the current globe, in the current world reality. So the atheistic philosophy that is become embedded in society is because people don't have any training, any spiritual training. They have no knowledge about the Vedas. They create their own ideas about what the world is and what we should be doing, what is the priorities. And in this way, we can see the results are very unfortunate. There's a lot of suffering in the world. Mental illness is on increase. There's ecological devastation. Animals have been slaughtered I was reading statistics like 150 billion animals annually throughout the whole world, 150 billion, including fish and all these other species, you know. This is like a rough idea what is going on, 150 billion. We are 7 billion, this is more than 10 times, 15 times the population of the human kind is being killed every year around the globe to satisfy the market. So this is just because someone deviates from pure teachings, pure knowledge, you can see the consequences are tremendous. So Bhagavad Gita explains, Krishna tells Arjuna in 9th chapter that this knowledge is called Rajavidya. Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram, Idam, Uttamam, Pratyaksha, Vagamam, Dharmam, Susukam, Kartum, Aveyam. So, if we know the Rajavidya, the knowledge given by the Supreme Person, which is very confidential, it's Guhyam, it's pure, Pavitram, it's transcendental, Idam, Uttamam, it can be perceived directly, pratyaksha vagamam dharmam, about how to behave, what is our dharma. We can understand what is our function, what is our position in the world, pratyaksha vagamam dharmam. And we become happy, susukam kartum aveyam. So in our modern society, this is really missing. This knowledge is really missing. We have been indoctrinated, people have been indoctrinated to believe in Darwin, Darwinian theory. Everything came by accident and some chemicals mixed up accidentally under certain environmental influences, and by accident they evolved into small unicellular species, and then they developed gradually into more complex forms, and over billions of years, 4 billion years, then we have the human being, which is the masterpiece of chance, you know. That's their idea. And a lot of the people actually believe in this, that everything is just matter, and the highest purpose of life is just to work hard and play hard. When I was in Cambridge University some years ago, we were doing some outreach program with the devotees. There was a big sign in Cambridge, in one of the halls, student halls, work hard and play harder. Did you get it? Work hard and play harder than you're working. In other words, work hard and enjoy more than what you're working. So that is the philosophy of modern society in two words: work hard and play harder. In other words, if you don't have the money, you can enjoy on credit. This is what it means practically to work harder. Use your credit card, you know, and then work hard, and then work harder, play harder. That's what it is in modern civilization. So because people have no higher knowledge, they don't really invest time into self-discovery. They're simply identifying with the body, and they want to serve the body. But in more recent times, like the past few years, we have another scientific angle coming through, which is becoming very much helpful to create a foundation for Prabhupada's teachings. And this is the community of scientists who call themselves the intelligent design community. So they are doing also research, but they are doing actually honest research, because they point out all the faults, all the mistakes of Darwinism. They show all the mistakes which are not small mistakes, but still the evolutionists, they use these examples, which are wrong, they put them into the school books, in the university books, to convince the students that evolution works. For example, they may say that, use an example of Darwin's tree of life. They can say, well, Darwin taught that the first living being was a simple celled organism, and from this simple celled organism developed all the others. And then they will say, when we look at the archaeological record, we will see that there is evidence how we find different links between this species and that species in the archaeological record. We see how one species evolved into another. And then they will speak about molecular biology, and they will say we can see how molecularly this species is related to this, genetically this is related to this. We can see the trace, the genetic code of this species is very close to the human. For example, the monkey, the chimpanzee is close to this. They will find like that something to support the claim of Darwin's tree of life. And in this way, they will put all these false things, which are false claims. If you really study them carefully, you see it's not like that. And they will try to convince the students that this is actually the reality. You know, there is so much fossil record, there is so much evidence on a molecular level that shows that this species came from this, it all branched out, etc. So therefore, you have to believe that life is just once-off experience. We are the body, we are just an accidental creation of the universe, unconscious universe, and life has no higher purpose than just enjoying, working hard and enjoying. Karl Marx, the father of socialism and communism, in his writings, he was also stating the same thing. A human being has no higher purpose than just working hard and then enjoying, that's all. That was Karl Marx's idea about the humans. So whether it's a capitalistic philosophy or communistic philosophy, it's practically the same atheism being force-fed into society. But the reality is different. So this intelligent design movement, they find, and of course Druta Karma Prabhu is part of it, Prabhupada's disciple. In fact, he's the main proponent of showing how the archaeological record is incorrect. He wrote many books, I'm sure devotees are aware of these books, like Forbidden Archaeology and Hidden History of Human Race, where we find so much evidence pointing that there is no such thing as a gradual lineage from one species to another. In fact, there is something called the Cambrian explosion. So there is about 500 million years ago, there was a sudden appearance of complex biological species. This is called the Cambrian explosion. But then there are also findings that are even more strange. He found like human artifacts, Druta Karma Prabhu, he actually discovered them within different chambers of universities or museums. These different tools have been hidden away from the public because they don't fit within the Darwinian theory. So he found human artifacts like 2 billion years old, which makes sense because if you look at the Vedic cosmology and the Vedic history, you see that the current scientific idea is that this Earth is about 4.6 billion years old, and this is exactly what is Brahma's day. You know, that's what the time of Brahma has been. So that means that there should be some artifacts that are as old as billion years old as well, because there were civilizations. Time is cyclical. In the Vedic scriptures it's explained, so there were civilizations who lived and died. So of course very scarce artifacts are left from like 2 billion years ago, of course, but still here and there something can be found. So that's why he wrote this book, Forbidden Archaeology, to show the world that there is another angle that is presented and that is actually really existing, that the scientists are ignoring because they are the authority. They can control what to go into the public eye and what not to go into the public eye. So they hide away everything that is not fitting in with the Darwinian theory. So then we look at the molecular biology and we see the most recent discovery is they found many genes that have genetic code that is completely disconnected from any other species. So this genetic code is completely different. In other words, it doesn't have a parental genetic code coming from another species. It doesn't resemble anything. And within one species you can find many genes that are completely different from any other species that resembles biologically similarity. Like the monkey and the human being, biologically they resemble one another. Two legs, two arms. The monkey sometimes behaves as a human, you know. Like he can eat like this and he can think like that, you know. It looks a bit, so it gives the idea that we have evolved from that creature. But actually when you look even on a molecular level, the genes, some of the genetic makeup is completely new, completely different. There is no similarity, there is no connection between the one and the other. Of course there is some, but there is also many genes that are completely different. So then they cannot make it up how then these genes originated. They are not even similar, they are completely different. So then they came with the idea of like a ghost lineage, a gene ghost lineage, a proto-gene, like something came in between, like a bridge to create this gene. But then it disappeared, we can't find it. So in other words, it's like it's just like a hallucination. They think something was there to create this, but then we can't find any evidence of it. So it's just a hallucination, it's a belief, complete belief. It's just one example of what is going on in the scientific world. But despite all this, these claims are still within the school books. Still the university books are teaching the same things to the children, the wrong things to the children, to the youth, to the students. And there is a scientist called Jonathan Wells. He wrote a book in 2000, The Icons of Evolution. And then he exposed all these icons, the Tree of Life, the fossil record, Darwin's finches, there is some birds that apparently their beaks enlarged. So they were using this as an example of evolution. Not saying that after there was a drought then they became shrunk again, the beaks of the birds. They just said it enlarged, but then they don't say the reality that the beaks shrunk after that. So many of these things. So they are filling up the books with these things to convince the students of their theories. So Jonathan Wells wrote Icons of Evolution in year 2000. The book became very famous. It was critiqued by many scientists and he was hoping they would take note of these wrong ideas that they are putting across and they will take them out of the books. He really hoped for it. 2017, last year, he checked again all the school books. Everything is still there, despite him exposing all the mistakes. Everything is still there within the school books. 17 years later, nobody is bothering to take them out. All the wrong things they have there. So then he wrote another book, Zombie Science, which just came 2017, explaining how these icons of evolution, he calls them icons of evolution, are dead, practically not living. They are not, you cannot really prove them to be correct. But still, they persistently stay in the books like zombies. They're supposed to be dead, but they're there in the books. That's why zombie science. So this propaganda is going on around the world, and people are really hurting from this. Because they think there is nothing higher than just eating, I mean, working and enjoying. Prabhupada used to say eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So the books like Srimad Bhagavatam give us another idea, another perspective, how there is a Supreme Person. So if someone asks us, okay, how do you know there is a God if you cannot see Him? How will you justify yourself? How will you convince the person of why do we think there is a God? So Prabhupada was very clear about it in his book Life Comes From Life, and of course in many of his books, very philosophically, very logically, Prabhupada established a standard by which we can actually approach such questions using logic and evidence. Whatever evidence is there has to be used, and of course logically we have to convince the people. You know, during 2500 years ago, Socrates used to teach people based on logic very much. He was a very great thinker and logician, intellectual. And Plato, his disciple, was also teaching people based on logic. But Plato's disciple, Aristotle, he changed everything. He started to analyze, he started to use more pratyaksha than anuman. You see, then they started to experiment on animals, cut frogs and, you know, look at the rats and, you know, doing all these kind of things. So this came from the Aristotelian approach to science. Aristotle believed that the senses has to see what is going on, and it's superior to just intellectualizing about reality. So from there the gross science came, the way we know it today, from Aristotle. He was the first one who came up with this perspective. And practically modern science is pretty much Aristotelian. Aristotle believed that in spontaneous generation means he believed that matter can produce life. And many other philosophers taught the same thing. Like, they were given the example, if you put some meat somewhere, some piece of meat, and if you observe it after some time, you'll see some entities are coming out of it. So they're generating themselves from the meat. That's what they taught, you know. But then there was a scientist, Italian scientist, and then Louis Pasteur, they made some experiments and they defeated this. So what they did, they took, I think, three jars, different jars. In the one jar, they put a piece of meat open. In the other jar, they put it closed inside. And the other jar, they put a piece of cloth on top, thin piece of cloth, which allowed air to enter. So then they examined after some time what's going to happen to these three different jars. And they saw where it was completely open, some light generated, some entity started to eat there, whatever, to do their thing, you know. Where the jar was closed, nothing was there inside. And when the jar had some cloth on top, there were some entities on top of the cloth trying to get inside. Which actually shows there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. You know, matter cannot really produce life by itself. So this was the study of Louis Pasteur, and there was an Italian scientist. But still, to this day, even these experiments are there, to this day a lot of people believe in spontaneous generation, that just matter produces life under certain circumstances. So, therefore the Vedic literatures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, is the Raja Vidya. This is the sun that will illuminate the darkness within this age of Kali. And Prabhupada came with that specific purpose. Hridayananda Maharaj says to close the Renaissance cycle. If you know, the word Renaissance was used in a period of time that was exactly the same time as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. 1486, Mahaprabhu appeared in Bengal, in Nadia, modern-day India. At the same time in Europe, Renaissance started. This scientific breakaway, the scientific people started to break away from the church because of the Catholic Church's dogmatic ideas, and the thinkers started to break away. And they called this the Renaissance. And of course they found many things. They did a lot of research and study, and that's how we have the research of Newton, and of course later on people like Darwin and others left their mark. So there is a saying that science in its babyhood was theistic. When it grew up, science, when it grew up a little bit, it became agnostic. You know, we're not so sure whether there is a God or not. When it grew up a little more, science became atheistic. And again at the end, it will become theistic or spiritual. So it's going to go through a cycle. So Prabhupada actually is coming, has come to create this, finish this cycle, this Renaissance cycle. It started with theistic science, like Newton and so many other scientists. Initially they were theists. They believed in God, they explained the world scientifically, but they believed in God. But then gradually became agnostics and atheists. And then Prabhupada came to close this cycle by teaching scientifically how there is a God. And then the Renaissance cycle is closed. So Prabhupada actually brought the culmination of the Renaissance. And his teachings, along with the teachings of modern scientists like the Intelligent Design Movement, who are supporting very much Prabhupada's philosophy, at least in their conclusion that there is an intelligent designer behind the creation. They don't talk who is that intelligent designer. They say this is not our business. We can see there is a design within the body because there is a very complex information. It's like the human genome. They counted the genes within the human body. All the totality of genes is called genome. It's 3 billion letters. 3 billion letters. Okay? So 3 billion letters of strict mathematical algorithms, information. Strict. So we know if there is information, there has to be intelligence behind it. You can't have a strict information just by accident. And also the scientists in Intelligent Design Movement, they made some experiments. They said, okay, let's see, let's try to edit the genes. Let's try to edit the DNA and see what will happen. Random editing. Just take different molecules out and put some other molecule in there and see what's going to happen. Like an artificial way to see whether we can create something valuable for evolution. Because from information, the scientists believe if something mutates within this information, within these genes, if there is a mutation, then that gives the information to produce a new organs and gradually new species, new organs and gradually new species, just by changing the information within the genes. So then the intelligent design movement scientists started to do that. There is a scientist called Douglas X. He did research himself, and then also he studied what other scientists have been doing. And he discovered that actually, if you take randomly some letters from the genes, you do not create a new genetic information, but you actually destroy the gene. You destroy the DNA molecule by random removal and random replacement with different molecules. So he gave the example, if you take a book, maybe you've heard this example before. If you take a book, it's got a specific information on the page. So let's say we will take randomly some letters. Like there is a word here, it says explained. We will take the E out and we'll put B there. Then we'll take the D at the end and we'll put M. What will become? Explain something like that. So if you try to randomly take letters and replace them randomly with other letters without any intelligent approach, you're actually distorting the information. You're not going to create something ingenious, something that is valuable, that will contribute to the creation of a new species or something like that. So these are the findings of modern science. In other words, the Aristotelian approach led people away from God. Aristotelian approach led people away from God initially. But now the same approach of analyzing and investigating is bringing people back to God. Because technology has advanced so much, they can see clearly what is going on inside the cell, what is going on inside the DNA, the molecule, what is going on inside the gene. So the same approach, Aristotelian approach, is bringing back now the conclusion to theistic. And that supports the Anuman, the intellectual thinking. For example, if there is information, logically, there should be a designer, there should be someone who created that information. So the Pratyaksha supports Anuman, and that connects with Shabda Brahman. Shabda Brahman says there is a God. So now the modern research, Pratyaksha, shows that this complex information is there. This is Pratyaksha. And then the conclusion is there must be a designer of this information, that's Anuman. And that is in line with Shastra, Shabda Brahman. So these three become harmonized again. So Prabhupada was very much eager that we have Bhaktivedanta Institute, that our devotees are actually doing research and being at the cutting edge of teaching. Because if we don't have this knowledge, then people very easily can mistake us as people who are sentimental and we just believe in something there. We cannot explain ourselves why. So this is one of the very important aspects that Prabhupada stressed. The teaching of Krishna consciousness, that is kirtan as well. And Prabhupada makes it clear in conclusion that although there is no difference between the energy and the energetic, in one sense, in quality, qualitatively, in quantity there is a difference, because the energetic is the source of the energy. Therefore, the energetic is the final cause of all causes. You know, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So the cause of all causes is Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna. And then all the other emanations are subordinate to Sri Krishna. In that way, we should be always aware of what is Krishna's desire, not what is our desire based on how we feel, but we should think of what does Krishna wants us to do, because we are his servant. Someone may say, this is a very nice philosophy of slavery. You know, you're the servant of someone else and you always have to think what they think. You know, you always have to obey what they want. It's a very nice philosophy of slavery, someone can tell you like that. But we understand that it is natural for the part to cooperate with the whole. And if we really understand we're the part of the whole, then it's very natural. It's not really a slavery, it's my eternal function to cooperate with the whole. Slavery is something like, I am not part of Krishna, but I am artificially being forced to serve him, that is slavery. But if I am part of Krishna, then there is no question of slavery. It's my natural position of being servant, you see. So, these things have to be understood. And also, our service to Krishna is not based on force. It is based on love. It's based on free will. Krishna doesn't want to force people to love him. That's why, especially in Kali Yuga, he doesn't appear in front of us when we do yagyas. He appears as the holy name. He appears as Shastra. He appears as the ISKCON movement. He appears as the deity. But not really in person, the way he appeared at the time of Daksha. He just came out of the fire and he started speaking to them. Interesting. Because the people those days were more pious and more intelligent and more highly evolved. With some exceptions, like Daksha was an exception. He was like a very envious personality, and because of that, the whole commotion, the whole sacrifice was destroyed. Sati left the body. So many people got injured and killed because of his offense to Lord Shiva. So one offense can destroy so much of sanity, so much of peace. Therefore, we have to be very careful. And this is what Krishna is stating. Be careful. Because Brahma and Shiva, they are not different from me. In a sense, that they are my energy. And if you offend a Vaishnava, then you are offending him. So this is why he starts with that verse. After he appeared and he heard all the prayers of the demigods, Krishna starts with that verse. Be careful. Do not offend others. Try to serve others. And be happy. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granturak Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. So we have a few minutes for questions, for comments, if anyone would like. Yes, Hare Namah.
I was just wondering, why does Prabhupada describe the thinking oneself about the last snare of mine?
Yes.
Like the last attack.
Yes. This is a very deep question. It's Maya can trick us by, you know, when you advance spiritually, Maya can trick us in many different ways by saying that you are pure now, you have achieved a high consciousness you can enjoy, and you'll not get a reaction. So this is the last snare of Maya. So we can see many examples like this. Bilva Mangal Thakur was on a level of Bhava Bhakti. He was bewildered. We can see Maharaj, who was that Maharaj that became attached to the deer? Bharat Maharaj, he became attached to the deer. He was on the level of Bhava Bhakti also. So he considered the service to the deer more important. He was thinking, I'm not going to get attached, I'm going to just serve this deer, I'll be fine, you know. So, but in both cases, I guess if we are in devotee association, we'll be safe. But in both cases, they have no association, and I think that's the problem. If we are serving devotees and if we are sheltered by devotees, we'll be protected. That's why there are ashrams, Brahmachari ashram, Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha ashram, Sannyasa ashram. So if you associate with people, devotees, who are like you in the service of God, you're protected. But if we don't, then there is that danger. Sometimes we get deluded by the illusory energy, you know. It's very powerful. Mama maya durataya. It's impossible to overcome unless we surrender. How do we surrender? By serving Krishna through his devotees. Prabhupada says in the fourth canto, I think in one of these chapters, he says, devotional service to Krishna without association of devotees is hallucination. You see. So really serving devotees is the key to Krishna's heart. If we really want to please the Supreme Lord, we have to serve his devotees. And in fact, it is said, Krishna says in Mahabharata, one who is my who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee, but one who is a devotee of my devotee. You see. So always that aspect is there. We have to approach Krishna through his devotees. And if we take shelter of the devotees, then we'll be protected. Otherwise, dangerous, very dangerous. Yes, Prabhu.
You said that my combining different beings.
Genetic modification.
Yeah.
They add a new gene to the plant. They don't they don't modify the original genes. They just add like a fish gene or something to make it more durable. So it's not that they edit the original gene that is there, the tomato gene, for example. It's not that they edit that. They just add a new gene to the tomato to make it more durable. But that is not really doing a gene editing. And even if they do that, this is still a symptom that an intelligent person is doing something. It's not an accident. Because the one who puts the new gene inside is an intelligent person. You understand? It's not an accident. You see? So again, that shows that behind information is the intelligence. Even that proves the fact that we should always think there is an intelligence behind it. Do you understand? Yes?
Through translation here, Prabhupada said that impersonally there is no difference between the knowledge.
Yes.
Does that mean there is no, impersonally there is no difference between me and other living entities or like all living entities?
In quality there is no difference, but identity is different. We have everyone is in one sense non-different and at the same time we are different. Achinte bera bera tattva. So how is that? Qualitatively we are one, same substance, we are spiritual energy. But we are different individuals, which are part of the Supreme Person, these different individuals. Therefore we are non-different because we are still part of the Supreme Person. So if I treat you badly, I'm treating Krishna badly, you see, because you are his energy. Are you married?
No.
Okay, if you were married, I would have asked you, do you have a child? You would have said, yes, I have. So if I treat your son badly, how will you feel? Like I'm treating you badly, right? So it's the same thing. If I treat any person badly, then I'm mistreating Krishna indirectly. In that sense, there is oneness.
But if you say in question, so then let's say it comes to spiritual, you know.
No, spiritual doesn't mean impersonal. There is spiritual personalism. Impersonally means just in quality. In quality they are one with God. So we should not offend anybody. Because qualitatively everybody is like God, qualitatively, but not quantitatively. Quantity means the power. You don't have the power of God. Like, you cannot just desire, I'm going to create a big skyscraper now, and just by your will, within 1 minute, it's there already. You cannot do that, neither do I. So, if you were God, then you should be able to do that. God means you can do whatever you want. If you were God, then you should be able to go to the moon now, today, in this minute. But we're not. We're so limited by time and space. So we are the energy of God. And when the energy tries to imitate God, then it becomes captured by Maya and in the cycle of birth and death. Because we are not able to counteract the influence of the laws of nature. The laws of nature do not act on God, because God is independent. They are His own energies, the laws of nature. Like time and space are God's own energies. He is not affected by them, but we are affected. Just like fire is not burned by fire. But me and you, if we touch fire, we'll be burned. So Krishna cannot be burned by His own laws and energies. He cannot be affected. That's the point. So we are definitely the energy, and being the energy means we are the servant. We should be in harmony with the Supreme. We should harmonize ourselves with the Supreme, then we'll be happy. But if we don't, then we become sick like a virus and we suffer. This is the Krishna consciousness conclusion. Yes, Radha Madhav Prabhu.
Talking about the position, the path of the devotee is not one of praising or criticizing, but to serve.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. To serve others. Sometimes we may praise someone in service, if we know that that will benefit the devotee. Sometimes we may even correct somebody appropriately, not criticize just to destroy the person, but correct the person.
That is connected with devotion.
Yes. Otherwise we can just damage somebody. Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. Good point. Yes. Qualitatively means we are spiritual. It's just like a basic understanding. Of course, even qualitatively we cannot be equal to Krishna, but we are the same in essence. We are spiritual being. Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. But of course Krishna has the totality of all qualities within Him to the topmost extent. So even qualitatively He is superior to us, but at least essentially we are the same in quality, being spiritual, Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. Because the Jiva is also Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha, eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge, if it is in service of Krishna.
That means it's not the activity that exists, but the soul, that aspect of quality.
The quality, yeah, is the spiritual, yeah, being the para prakriti, the spiritual energy is the same in quality as the Supreme, being eternal, full of bliss, full of knowledge. That's what it means. We are qualitatively one. But the detail is, Krishna is always superior. He has all the qualities in totality. And we have them in a very minute measurement. Okay, last one, Prabhuji.
We are Satchitananda, and Krishna is also Satchitananda.
Yes.
But only the Satpa is capable. Chit and Ananda. Krishna is much more Chit and Ananda than we are. We don't have full knowledge. Krishna has got thousands of times more knowledge.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And the Ananda is huge, although it is said that the devotees enjoy more than Krishna. Like Srimati Radharani, that's why he came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to taste that enjoyment, you know. So, I don't know about the Ananda aspect. Maybe that one, I think Radharani must be enjoying more than Krishna if he wants to become her to experience. And of course devotees like Radharani. So there must be something there. But the knowledge part, I'm sure Krishna has the complete knowledge. Although we have probably knowledge, but maybe not as complete as him. But certainly we're eternal, sat. And certainly we have a vigraha, a form, spiritual form, which is our sarup shakti, you know, the particular form in specific rasa relationship that we have with Krishna. We have a specific rupa or vigraha that manifests to relate to Krishna in a specific way, whether it's in chanta ras, whether it's dasa ras, Sakya ras, Vatsalya ras, or Madhurya ras. We have a specific vigraha that specifically facilitates that pastime. So we are sat, we have a vigraha, we have knowledge, we have Ananda as well, like him. That's for sure. But of course Krishna is the supreme source of everything, so he should have all these things in completeness.
Talking about the Ananda,
I don't know, I never thought about it. But the devotee definitely enjoys a lot, and that is by the mercy of Krishna. Yes, Radha Madhapu.
Just on that point, I'm sure Prabhupada describes it. I remember reading it in a letter to the disciple that there is much more satisfaction for the devotee when they serve in separation.
Okay.
So much.
It's more ecstasy, service and separation, yeah. The topmost ecstasy. Okay, thank you. Oh, one more question.
If we step on an ant and we do japa and again we step, so do we get reaction?
No. If it's innocent, if you made it on purpose, I'm going to step and I'll chant, then you'll get. But if it's an innocent stepping on an ant, then you don't get reaction because you didn't really mean it. And you're chanting, you're thinking of Krishna, so the ant will become blessed because you're thinking of Krishna. But if we do it on purpose, we will get a reaction. We have to be always good, compassionate to all living beings. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai. Granthura Chimad Bhagavatam ki Jai. Itai Gaur Premanandi.